Just because I can. Linoleum knife.
A big thank you to James Scales, who got sick of hearing us saying every week that Dave was going to dig the cassettes out of the closet and then never doing it.
Well, that's because they're. I did the dig.
Uh-huh.
I archaeology digged the closet.
Mm-hmm.
There were no cassettes. We were out, which is, as you recall, it's what we discussed last week.
No, I don't think so.
And then I said I was going to go to Radio Shack.
Oh, right, right, right.
And before I could get over to Radio Shack, still open, by the way, and in our neighborhood, James Scales, he sent us two fresh, new, clean cassettes mail.
James Scales.
Thank you so much for that.
James Scales.
Incredible listener.
Yes.
With cassettes.
So all is fixed.
There's now a cassette. Sort of. And you just spent a long time...
not saying what the show is.
Making sure that the theme song of the show...
Oh, that too.
...is on one side of the cassette like 20 times. So that the constant rewinding will not break the tape.
It's closer to 80 like it did times.
Did you really do it that many times?
Yeah, I almost filled the entire first side of it, and it's a 33-second theme song.
That's a lot of...
La la la.
I'm glad you did that. I had my headphones on, I was listening to other music.
Yes. I kind of went to a zen place where I wasn't even hearing it anymore.
My favorite thing of this process was when you pulled the other cassette out of the cassette player and said, here, where does this go? It was a cassette, carcass cassette. And I was like, it goes into the cassette that's marked carcass, that has the name carcass on the label. And then you thought it was going to be all black metal.
Unreadable font.
Unreadable typeface.
So now that we're nearly 3 minutes in.
And it was, hang on, I'm finishing a sentence that's very important. Clearly legibly written on the cassette case. That shows you what you know about all the things. And I said the name of the show was Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
Already, one time.
But we haven't said...
How many times must we say it? How will people not know what they're listening to?
You never know when we've got a first-time listener.
Tell them what kind of podcast this is.
It's a podcast of the cinema.
Tell them who you are.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor of The Wrap and a film critic for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
Tell them who I am.
You are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
Are you the Dolce or the Gabbana of this duo?
No, thank you. I am neither. Jerks. What is their problem?
They have some fresh news. The Dolce and the Gabbana, who apparently...
They say this every couple of years.
They are a couple?
Yes.
They're a couple?
Yes.
All right. And now they're upset about something about gays?
Every couple of years, they decide to remind everyone that they think that somehow gays shouldn't be parents, and that gay families don't count, and they're weird and chemical or something.
This is not the first time
This is not the first time.
Are you sure about
this? I'm positive. If you read any of these articles, they go... You know, previously in 2006, they noted blah, 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 blah. I don't know if they're just super Catholic and self-loathing or what, but those kids need to calm down.
That's probably what... I mean, they're not so Catholic that they didn't do time for tax fraud over in Italy, right? I mean, didn't they actually get sentenced to prison, both of them, for tax fraud?
I'm sure they had the chicest, you know, orange jumpsuits.
I just like the idea of, like, two gay... Italian fashion designers who are a couple telling other gay couples how to live.
Yeah. And that they're gross. Or that they're wrong or whatever.
I mean, all right. As a gay couple, we're a gay couple.
Sure.
We're married. And I would like to tell other gays how to live. And I think some of them are gross.
Such as?
Maybe I should start doing that myself. I'm going to come up with a list.
Okay.
Of people I think are gross. And rules of living for other gay couples.
People like with bad art in their house or something? Or what's your list?
That might be number one on the list. Don't give all my dirty secrets away.
There are private conversations
that you and I have about other people's art collections that
you're the one who wants to be judgy judge now. You want to be Judge Judy and executioner.
There are don't call me out on that.
I'm not naming names. But if you think we're talking about you, maybe we are.
Unless you're our friends, and then we're not.
But anyway, that aside.
Unless there's something that's total garbage in your house.
We are not talking about the cinema.
I know. We will talk about the cinema. I just figured, I've had good friends come into our house and look at stuff on the wall and be like, this is fecal matter, you know.
How much did you pay for that?
Yeah, exactly. So, do what I want. Movies.
Yeah.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
It's a live-action remake of Cinderella.
Of the 1950 animated version, specifically.
Based on the Disney properties. That's what it says in the credits.
Have
you
really?
Did you sit through the credits?
I did not, no.
Oh, you didn't sit through the closing credits?
No, why? Is there a button?
Kind of, yeah, a little bit of one. Really? I mean, not a visual one. Yeah, not only in the closing credits does it say based on Disney properties. Mm-hmm. I know, I love that.
Because you can't copyright a Brothers Grimm fairy tale.
I love that.
Copyright an earlier movie version.
Yes. And over the closing credits, we'll just sit through the closing credits. There's a cute little
you can tell me off mic
thing that happens at the closing credits.
And I'm not going to make the joke that somebody out there is already doing because it's so obvious.
What is the joke?
Does Nick Fury come and ask her to join the Avengers? That's played out. If you were making that joke at home, shame on you. Let it go. That's old. The last time that was funny was when you asked if he showed up at the end of the credits for The Help.
Did I ask that?
Not on the show. I think you just told me that in person. I thought it was funny. But that was several years ago when that joke still had some legs on it.
You've just taken all the steam out of me. I don't even want to think about that. It's just...
I'm sure our listeners...
You just depressed me.
I'm sure our listeners are too cool for that.
You better hope.
For that hacky a callback.
Right. Yeah. A hacky callback that you just thought up.
I thought of it, and then I thought, I'm not going to say that because it would be a hacky callback. And then I thought I would point out that it was a hacky callback.
So the first thing that happens in your head, though, is the hacky callback.
I think of it, but then I filter it. But I guess you're right. I'm having it both ways now.
I'm kind of upset that you even thought about it and that you brought it up. You just bummed me out.
Just because I acknowledge the hacky comeback doesn't mean I made it.
You go shh right now. Shh. There's stuff at the end of the credits.
Okay.
And it's not a clip. It's not visual. It's music.
Okay.
It's sweet.
All right.
What were we talking about?
Cinderella.
Live action remake by Kenneth Branagh.
If Dave White seems tetchier than usual this week, it's really hot in Los Angeles.
I'm not tetchy. I'm angry.
Which I know does not sound like a valid complaint to anyone listening to this show who is blanketed in snow right now.
No, it is the equivalent complaint because to be blanketed in snow is as angering to the people who have to deal with that as an unexpected March heat wave is to us. This isn't happy times. It's 70 degrees and it's a beautiful day.
This is 90
degrees. 95 degrees outside in the middle of March.
And haha, the LA Marathon is happening.
Every window and door is open. You're going to hear the helicopters. You're going to hear the dogs downstairs barking. You're going to hear everything on this podcast this week because I'm livid that we're in the middle of this freak climate change event.
Put the ice bag back on your head.
You gave me an ice bag for my head, and I was very... When I was getting too cranky and making you mad by being mean to you, which I was totally being about an hour ago, you put the ice... You filled me an ice... We have a nice ice bag, like the kind that you used to see in old-timey...
movies and people have hangovers.
People have hangovers, they have an ice bag on their head. We have one of those. You put the ice bag, you get filled it full of ice, you put it on my head. You're a pretty good spouse.
I like to think so.
You made my head feel less burny inside.
Well, put it back on.
Here it is. Can you hear the ice bag? So, Cinderella.
Doing this. No, go ahead. I'm not going to take a picture of this.
I'm not doing this. Pause it.
Give me a second. Okay, I had some church giggles there, but I'm better now.
Hey, oh, we're back on?
Yes.
This is the least professional film podcast in the world.
Yes. But it's also not hosted by comedians, so I like to think that makes us special and different.
Well, are other film podcasts
hosted almost by all of them are hosted by comedians, I feel like. There's, you know, the B-Movies podcast and you know, the Canon and Malton on Movies.
Well, yeah, those are hosted by real film critics.
Well, Leonard has a... We know. Leonard has a comedian sidekick, so that's a half-comedian podcast. But, you know, the Flophouse and the Schmoes and the Worst Idea of All Time and, you know, a lot of the, you know, the How Did This Get Made and
right.
We Hate Movies.
The big podcast.
Yeah, these are movie podcasts hosted by comedians.
Right. You're right. I hadn't really thought about that. I don't care.
Cinderella.
What I care about is Cinderella.
Okay.
Directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Chris Weitz.
Right.
What is Chris Weitz written? American Pie?
Chris and his brother Paul co-wrote American Pie and About a Boy and In Good Company. Uh-huh. And then Chris on his own, I believe, did The Golden Compass.
Okay.
And some other stuff. He's got cred.
Interestingly enough, there are no spoilers to be given about this Cinderella. And the reason there are no spoilers is because there's nothing different about it in terms of what happens in the story. This is not a radical reimagining. This is not Maleficent.
Or Into the Woods.
Yeah, well, but that's right. It's there's nothing dark. There's nothing sort of ironic about it. There's nothing...
There's nothing post-feminist about it.
There's nothing based in critique at all. What you get is a very sort of high classic style and tone. This cost a lot of money to make, and it's all up there on the screen.
Sure.
It's beautiful. It is sumptuous. It is like a big, grand film.
Yeah.
You should see it on a big, grand screen. If you can.
Although I have to say, there were times where I kind of felt like it had that sort of post-production shellacking that you get in movies.
Well, yeah, because there are some digital effects.
Right, but not so much there are digital effects, but there are sort of obvious digital effects that just... It's like
everything shiny and, and gleaming.
All the movies get run through the same car wash now, you know, and it's an adjunct to the whole blue and orange thing, which this movie even does that a little bit.
I didn't mind.
But it is a handsomely mounted production.
I didn't mind that post-production shellacking.
Okay.
It didn't bother me at all. I thought it was really gorgeous to look at. What I really appreciate about this is the dilemma that Cinderella finds itself in as a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
Cinderella is the go-to, the shorthand name for talking about sort of anti-feminist narrative.
It has a complex named after it.
Indeed.
And everything.
Yeah. And, you know, that's partly Cinderella's own fault. Because throughout time, she has been the emblem of the passive heroine in need of rescuing.
That, and I think there's also been sort of a subliminal message of, you know, suffer and do for other people and, you know, do what you're told,
yeah.
even if it's cruel, and eventually yep. there's a payoff.
Yes. And so the feminist question of Cinderella becomes, for this film, for this sort of new version, is what makes women treat other women with cruelty because of men? You know, for the sake of men, why do women treat other women cruelly? And there's a bit of an answer here. It comes late in the film.
There's the teensiest flirtation with being interested in that subject, but not enough.
I wouldn't call it a teensy flirtation. I would call it a genuine inclusion. Especially when given the performance by Cate Blanchett as the stepmother, who is... like full bore Mommy Dearest.
I've heard step Mommy Dearest. I've heard her refer
from
to
beginning,
it.
From beginning until about 2/3 of the way through the movie. And then there's this sort of, she kind of dials it back about 2/3 of the way through, and you begin to see more of her desperation than her evil. Still evil.
It's funny, I wish you had seen the last 5 years, because it's very telling in the... There's a scene where she sort of confronts Cinderella, and she says, you know, you're kind, and you're beautiful, and you're innocent, and I... And never finishes that sentence.
Yes.
And there's two different songs in the last 5 years where right. the Anna Kendrick character is confronting the Jeremy Jordan character about his selfishness or his sort of being the center of things or success or whatever.
Right.
And they both end with her saying, and I... And not finishing either. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting parallel.
Maybe I'll go watch that movie. Maybe I won't.
You probably won't.
Ingo said it was no good.
Yeah. We've already had that battle on this show.
I believe her, I think.
Yeah, well...
I gotta believe Ingo.
Then I guess you gotta believe her on the Duff, too.
No, she's totally wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so are you. So is everybody else. I stand alone.
You are the cheese.
Anyway, I think they really... Cate Blanchett really dials this back... And gives this person more humanity. And I feel like that's also the way that the script approaches all of these characters as well. Even the minorest of minor characters, like the king. Like, I don't think I ever even knew that the prince had a king dad.
I don't know that every version does, necessarily. Yeah.
But, you know, he's played by Derek Jacobi. So sure. You get this really incredible actor.
Yeah.
As a character in this film, you got to give him something to do.
Sure.
And the movie gives him something to do. The film even gives the prince something to be.
Yes.
Which is a bland character.
Right.
In almost every other telling of this story. The prince is nothing.
One of the things...
Except a good-looking guy.
One of the things I think the movie does really wisely is to establish a relationship between Cinderella and the prince when they don't know who each other are.
Yes.
And so that when she shows up at the ball, it's like he knows who she is and is already interested in her. It's not like, hey, who's that hot chick who showed up at my party?
Right.
You know, so that gives it more of something. I didn't get as much out of what they do with Cate Blanchett's character as you did. I kind of wanted more of that. I think having been conditioned by Maleficent, I was expecting that they would have given her a little more... Not rope, but a little more sort of backstory explanation as to her desperation and her need to, you know, what do you do when you have two daughters that you have to marry off and you're in debt, you know, that sort of thing.
And when you have to be married off yourself.
Sure, yeah.
You know.
You know, so they touch on that some. I would have liked more of that, but, you know, because the first thing I thought after, you know, Cinderella's father dies is, neither of you gets to inherit this land.
Yes, and that's.
I started thinking about Tilda Swinton in Orlando. You know,
yeah. It's set in this in the you know
fairy
long,
tale
long
kingdom.
Ago, far away fairy tale kingdom. But the old timey rules are the same. You know, marrying well is the woman's best option
sure.
in this world, and it is in fact her only option.
Right,
and so the idea that you know. That Cate Blanchett has to get those other two daughters out the door and into what the film calls advantageous
right.
arrangements.
Yeah,
that's a big deal. She kind of has a reason for locking Cinderella up in the attic. Now, the other thing I really liked about this was Lily James.
Yes.
As Cinderella. I think she's kind of a perfect Cinderella. She's got this warm hearted, sort of sturdy backbone.
She's not a simp.
And she's not a warrior.
Yes.
But she's also not taking it all lying down.
Yeah. Thankfully, this is not a reboot of a fairy tale where they stick a sword in the hand of the heroine.
Right.
Which I think we've seen way too much of that. But and they make her not saccharine. They make her more self-possessed. You know, I compared the character to Job in my review. But,
right.
But she doesn't sort of...
I don't think it's like Job, though.
No, in this version, no. She's not just there to suffer and, you know, whatever. No, I liked her a lot, actually. I thought she was good.
She does the... She obeys their need. Not their need. She obeys their demands.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily really for their sake or even for her own, but for the sake of staying connected to the family home.
Right.
Which,
because of her parents.
Because of her parents. And she is self-possessed enough, I think, that I, and I said this in my review, that will eventually get posted on movies.com. that she's the kind of Cinderella that might actually be okay even without the prince at the end. Like, she's got the self, you know, possession to... Right. Maybe figure out a way to get those three housemates married off and away from her so that she could be in
the house back.
You're going to have the house back with her little mice, her nice little mouse friends.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't like the mouse friends. Go on, say your thing.
The mouse friends, okay, in the cartoon, they wear vests and hats and they sing and they're adorable. And it's, of course, yes, it's lovely that she talks to them. Here, it's these CG mice that are mice, and they're given some level of personality, but for the most part, they are just
mice.
And
they have the same names.
They have the same name. They're Gus and Jacques-Jacques.
The cartoon version.
But again, it was just like, when she's been sent down to the kitchen to eat her supper because she can't eat at the table with the stepmother and the stepsisters.
Right.
And the mice show up, and she comes over and talks to them and starts sharing her scrap dinner with them.
Her family.
All I could think was, "Ooh, you're feeding vermin in the kitchen."
No, they're adorable little. They're an adorable little mouse
they're
family.
They're not that adorable.
They are an adorable
they're
little
not
mouse
that
family.
They're realistically. They're her friends. They are realistic mice. So that just kind of grosses
me. They help her.
Some, yes, they do. the thing that bugged me about this movie, apart from the not going into more depth about the characters, the stepmother anyway. It does that thing that The Imitation Game does and The Help does, where they repeat the theme of the movie like 8 times.
Say the thing, and I'll tell you why it didn't bother
the
me.
The mother tells her several times while she's a little girl, and on her again on her deathbed, to is it have courage and be kind?
Oh, you can't remember what it is, even though they said it a million times.
I've seen like 8 movies since then.
Why don't you yourself together?
Have courage and be kind, and they it said it is uttered. So many times over the course of the film, it's that you is smart thing. You know?
I would say it's uttered about half a dozen times. It's okay. Spoken about half a dozen times.
Fair enough.
That's
too many.
I think I'm being generous with how many times that is. I think that is for the sake of the young audience that will be here to see it.
Maybe.
The Imitation Game. There's no excuse. You don't need that's. There's no excuse in a film. Aimed
adults.
At adults. You got a film that's aimed... Its target audience is still young women. Young girls.
Yes.
Not even young women. Young girls.
Who want to buy more dresses.
Yeah.
At the Disney store.
And I really feel like it's a wise approach. Because as a theme, what it's really saying is... Literally none of this other stuff matters. Keep yourself... standing upright.
I guess.
And you'll be fine.
I don't know that any of the Toy Story movies felt the need to repeat the same thing over and over again.
Well, then they just didn't. I don't know what the answer to that is.
I'm just saying. Being a kid's movie is no excuse.
It's beautifully directed.
It is.
The costumes are astounding.
Yeah,
from Sandy Powell. The production design is gorgeous. It's Dante Ferretti.
And Daisy.
And my favorite Downton Abbey character, which is not Lily James, although she is Lady Rose
also on Downton Abbey.
Abbey.
Daisy plays
Sophie,
one of the
Sophie McShero, who plays Daisy on Downton Abbey. He's my favorite sisters. Character on Downton Abbey.
Yes.
I know other people have other favorite characters on Downton Abbey. Mine's always been Daisy.
Well, you know,
from the get-go,
we see
from the beginning.
The first, you'll recall, the first episode is seen through her eyes. She has just gotten a job there.
Yeah.
And we are introduced to the downstairs world, at least, through her.
Yes. And so, what I love about her character on Downton Abbey is that she's going to be the person who has changed the most by the end of the show. That's happening drastically this
because she's the
this season because she's finally getting an education.
She was the youngest character,
right?
It might still be, not counting the kids, you know.
Right. She was like 24 when the show started, and she was playing 14.
Yeah.
And her storylines have been consistently, for me, the most moving of all of them. With the farmer old man who's the father of her dead husband.
Yeah, marrying the guy in his deathbed.
So she's my favorite. And so, and she's terrific as one of the stepsisters.
Yeah,
she gets to do this entirely different thing and be a screeching, howling, horrible person. I think this movie's really great. I'm really surprised that I'm saying that. As I drove onto the studio lot, the security guard laughed at me when I told him what I was here to see. Yeah. I don't know what that means. It was just weird. I said, I'm here for the Cinderella screening, and he goes, okay. I was like, what?
You're
what
big
I do?
Chief,
I know,
big,
it's
strong
old, yeah.
Like tree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, look, Shrek's here to see Cinderella.
I liked it.
And then I got dogged by Romaine on Derek and Romaine Friday night for liking it. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. If you're a gay dude and you actually say, oh, this thing that I like, that's aimed at women, the thing that is marketed toward women, if you like it and you're a gay guy, oh, man.
Prompt the eye rolling.
Yeah, everyone's going to go, you know, tell you what a stereotype you are.
Mm-hmm.
I set her straight, though. On the air, I said, look, you know, there's no winning in this argument. There's not even an argument in this scenario. There's no winning. If Cinderella exists in the world and you're a man, you're apparently not allowed to like it.
And then if you don't like it, you know, you're sexist or something.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. I do what I want. So check it out. Linoleum Knife is brought to you by
Audible.com.
Audible.com. We had our first Audible.com ad last week.
Yes.
And I rambled for 8 minutes.
Yes.
About them. Out of genuine enthusiasm.
Yes. But perhaps...
Maybe I went on a little too long.
Maybe you don't go off book this time.
There's no book to go off. This is no book.
Because it's audio.
There's no book to go off. There's just one line, you know, that needs to be said out there. And,
okay. Well.
And I you know what? I'm doing it. I'm just my do-over.
Yes, cut to the chase. Stop rambling. You don't need to vamp.
Audible.com is an audiobook company. And they have over 180,000 audiobooks that you can get.
Yes.
All the different kinds.
Yes.
The good ones and the garbage ones.
Oh, stop.
Come on. Not all books are good. You know this is a fact. How many books, out of every 100 books, how many of them are garbage books? At least 5. They all can't be winners. We don't know which ones those are.
But you know what? Audible is there for whatever you
a
like.
A book's garbageness is in the... eye of the beholder, or in this case, your ears.
That's right. We're not going to judge, but whatever you like, they got it at Audible.
Like, for example, we got the Amy Poehler book, like I said last week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone out there hates Amy Poehler and thinks that she's made of garbage.
Well, they're dumb.
And they don't want her. She's one of the 5, but she's not. She's amazing.
You could also get the audiobook based on someone who's been on this program, Anthony Breznican's novel, Brutal Youth.
True.
You can get it.
Who reads his book? Does he read it himself?
He does not read it himself. An actor, not someone famous. I don't know in front of me. But right. I'm sure a very talented reader of audiobooks reads that fine novel.
We need to get him back on the show and ask him why he was too lazy to read his own audiobook.
What's up with that, Breslin? You couldn't take some voice lessons?
So, yeah, the other great thing about these guys is that you're listening to this podcast of the cinema. And they have a lot of film books.
Yeah, a whole
film
section.
Audiobooks, too.
Everything.
Which is my next purchase.
Everything from biographies to Robert McKee's story, you know, for would-be screenwriters.
I don't know that I want to listen to him tell me how a story's supposed to go.
I understand that. But someone does.
I'm totally going to get... My next purchase is The Disaster Artist.
Oh, yeah.
The Greg Sestero book.
Read by Greg Sestero.
About my post office pal...
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau.
Which,
the director of The Room. This is about Greg Sestero's experience. Wild, insane experience.
Making cult film.
That film. And I would only be happier if Tommy Wiseau himself had read that book.
Maybe he reads his parts.
Do you think he might?
I don't know. Maybe Greg just imitates him.
See, now I have to get it.
Yes.
This isn't just me thinking I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it.
You too, dear listener, can get one of these books for free. How, you ask?
You get the free audiobook. You get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial right now if you go sign up at audiblepodcast.com/linoleum. That's us. We are your conduit to audible.com. And by doing that, you're helping us.
Yes, because they'll know.
They'll know that you came
that
to
they,
them.
You found them through us.
Your favorite podcast of the cinema.
Right. Audiblepodcast.com/linoleum for a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership.
And after that, it's, what, like $15 a month?
Something like that.
That's not a lot of money.
No, and you get every month, you get a credit towards free books.
And I'm a major, major cheapskate. But we're sticking with this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe even if they don't want to advertise with us anymore,
we'll still join.
After us being so terrible at doing ads for them, I think we're going to stay because I like this idea so much.
Yeah, and we're in Los Angeles. We spend way too much time
in the car.
So it'll be nice to have books to listen to. Yeah. So yes, check out. If you've never been to audible.com, go to audiblepodcast.com/linoleum. Get yourself a membership and a free book, and it will change your life.
Here's the other thing. With the $15, you just learned me this today. The $15 a month, is it 15 exactly?
I believe so.
Something like that? It's close to it, if not the full amount. You get... Each month, you get one credit.
Right.
And that one credit can often be exchanged for an audiobook.
Yes.
Not every single one, but like...
A whole bunch of them are... You can get
a whole bunch of them
credit.
Are just one credit, so you're going to get it... You're going to get the audiobook for even less than what it would cost when you bought it.
Exactly. So thank you, Audible, for your sponsorship of the program. We appreciate it. Speaking of Tommy Wiseau...
My post office friend.
Your post office friend.
He, for people who don't listen regularly or who forgot this, I'd say every third time I'm in the post office in our neighborhood, he's in line with me.
Gotcha. Which means he lives near
us. Which means he totally lives near us.
Why does he not go to Herb's? What's that problem?
Maybe he does. We just don't know it.
Maybe. We see other celebrities there.
Yes, we have.
But not Mr. Wiseau.
And I never speak to him. Because, you know, how many people do you think he has coming up to him all the time being like, oh, man, I love your movie, dude. I do love his movie.
And I think he enjoys being recognized, frankly.
Do you think so?
I think so. I think he is the walking embodiment of it is better to be talked about than not to be talked about.
I suppose. But I'm still not
going
to do anything.
What I was going
I
to
don't s- bother Brooke Shields
no,
at Los Tacos.
That's
I'm
fine.
Not bothering Tommy
don't bother
Wiseau
Tommy
with the
post office. That's fine. What I was going to say about Mr. Wiseau is that if you are a fan of his work, you might want to check out his new sitcom, The Neighbors, which he's been promising / threatening for the last several years. There are 4 episodes of it now streaming on Hulu+. I could not finish the first one. Because... Bad drama, like The Room, can be hilarious. Bad comedy is just kind of a car wreck.
And I'm gonna watch.
It's kind of a car wreck. It's a lot of people sort of yelling at each other. So
it's this house.
Kinda. yeah, it's. I will try it again. Maybe I need to watch it with other people. But it's a. It is a hot mess. But then again, if you are a Tommy Wiseau fan, you know, hot messes is what you're looking for. So.
Yes, it is.
Run All Night.
Yes, Run All Night. All right, you talk about what it's about.
Sure.
No, you know what? You're gonna do the cobbler next.
Yeah, true.
I'll talk about what it's
okay.
About. All right, because your version of telling what this movie's about becomes very convoluted. And
no, I can streamline it, which I did in my review too. After you complained about
after
my
I complained, yeah, after I complained.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts here,
and they're not important. All right, so
go ahead.
Liam Neeson's though.
Yes. What about Liam Neeson's though?
He is a former hitman for the Irish mob,
right,
in New York City.
For Ed Harris, who now calls himself a legitimate businessman,
and he's a broken down wreck.
Liam Neeson is.
Liam Neeson's though is a broken down wreck.
Yeah,
and he is out of money. He needs money to fix the furnace and the crappy railroad side tenement he lives in, and he goes off to be a drunken Santa Claus because it's set at Christmas time. He's a disaster. And his son, his adult son, played by Joel Kinnaman, well, if you saw the RoboCop remake,
yeah,
then you know who he is.
So, yeah, Neeson's last friend in the world is Ed Harris, and then both Neeson and Ed Harris have sons who play a key role here.
Joel Kinnaman is Neeson's son, and a guy named Boyd
Holbrook.
Who I don't really know very well.
He's been in a lot of. He was in Gone Girl. He's been. Right. He's got a pretty impressive.
He plays Harris's son, and there's a drug deal situation that goes wrong. He winds up dead. This is all within like the first 10 minutes.
No, you're skipping so much.
I know. I am skipping so much, and but it doesn't matter.
No, you're skipping the stuff that matters.
What am I skipping that matters?
Well, he doesn't wind up dead. He is dead because Neeson kills him.
I was getting to that part.
Well, no, you were just skipping right past it.
You're very impatient.
Oh, my God. All right, you tell it your way.
Neeson kills the son. He's gotta. He has no choice. And then Ed Harris goes after Neeson and goes after Neeson's son. The estranged son.
Who is legit.
Who has never been a criminal. Yeah. He just has a wife and kids and doesn't want any trouble. And doesn't want anything to do with Liam Neeson either.
Yeah.
So then over the course of the night, there's a lot of chasing and fighting and shooting and things being set on fire. And this film lives in that weird gray area between the Taken and Nonstop side of the Liam Neeson universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of his current career, which involves films like The Gray
and Walk Among the,
and
Tombstones.
Walk Among the Tombstones, which are very serious.
Somber.
I don't know that it does either one of them successfully. I don't know that it goes where it wants to go.
It doesn't wildly indulge in either extreme, but I think it finds a space in the middle that works. It's kind of pulpy and entertaining, and
it is that.
And there's,
it's competently executed.
I'm sure the dramatic
ice bag,
the dramatic aspects are probably, if they're satisfying, they're more satisfying because it's Liam Neeson and Ed Harris than it is because of the way it's written or directed. It's directed by Catalan filmmaker Jaume Collet-Serra, who previously did.
Would you please say that name again?
Jaume Collet-Serra.
Really like hearing you say it.
Who previously did the Neeson vehicles Nonstop and Unknown, both of which I liked.
Right.
And he also did Orphan, which is Cuckoo Bananas.
Orphan. Orphan is dope. Orphan is, if you ain't seen Orphan, this is basically like you haven't seen Grey Gardens. Like I said last week. Essential viewing.
Yes.
A child comes along and ruins his family. I don't want to give it away. This movie's been out for like 6 years, and I don't want to give away.
In case you haven't heard the
in
twist.
In case you haven't heard the twist. I don't want to tell. It's so brilliantly good and awful that you. Normally, the statute of limitations on spoilers is over.
Yes.
But I don't want to give it away. All I just right. want everyone within.
If you can hear my voice.
If you can hear my voice. You must watch Orphan.
So that's who's directing here. You know, it's yeah, it's fun. Like there's a handful of big set pieces, and I think they're all pretty effective. You know, there's this.
They are.
There's a chase with a cop car through Queens. There's a fire in a housing development. There's a a Madison Square Garden. There's a big hockey game is letting out. You know, and these are all used really well. The movie is a little showy in its transitions from place to place.
Highly showy.
Yeah.
Well, this camera just swoops down from the sky into these, dark little grubby spaces and spins around. And
it's like
there's
like,
nothing calm about the form.
Right. I called it Google Earth hopscotch in my review because it's like the camera will suddenly swoop up to the sky and give you a big helicopter view and then swoop back down into the zoom into the next place they're going.
I don't know if he knows how he wants to communicate things visually sometimes.
Well, I'm sure the idea of like I want to keep the pressure of this is all one night. This is an
I understand that
thing going. I mean, I don't know that it necessarily works, but I get what he's trying.
But the whole appeal of a film that's set at night is capturing that darkness.
Mm.
And this would almost be a noir if he weren't so fixated on blowing it out with all these harsh lights and Christmas trees and laser weapons and buildings that explode with fire and. You know, it's lit up like daytime most of the time. It's at night.
Well, you're exaggerating, but I see your point. Yeah.
So I'm disappointed about that. I feel like it wants to be a couple things that it doesn't. It can't commit to.
It's not perfect. There are flaws. The third act is a little stretchy, and they forecast it all from Act One, so you have to get through certain things for the thing to be over.
Yeah, it opens with the thing that it has to eventually wind up at.
And then Junkie XL did the score, and it's very blah.
Right.
But it's a passable fun.
It just doesn't stand out.
No, it's...
I mean, it doesn't have to, because the template for this kind of thing is already set in stone.
Yeah.
Like, older man redeems his moral life...
Right.
...by reclaiming power with violence.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, as much fun as that is, I think Neeson is at his best when he's a mess.
Well, I think the movie kind of allows for both, because, like, he's... You know, he has what his Taken character would call a particular set of skills that involve killing people. But at the same time, he is lugging around this somewhat reluctant, the son that he's trying to protect and save, who doesn't want to be saved by him because he resents him so much.
Yeah.
But every time the son tries to turn to, the police or something, it just makes things worse.
And
Neeson's really the only one who understands this world well enough to get them through it, alive. So I thought that kind of added a little something,
I guess.
It's not great, but it's...
I want him to be...
If you liked Nonstop and Unknown, you'll have fun at this one.
I do. I loved Nonstop.
Yeah.
And I liked Unknown. And I like First Taken movie.
Yes.
The other two are not good.
No, but, they're not. It probably helped that I saw this...
I gotta say that as much fun as those films are, The Gray and A Walk Among the Tombstones are kind of what I would watch again.
I don't know. I would probably maybe lean towards the ones that are more just goofy genre fun, But not that I don't admire those other films for being darker. It probably helped that I saw this movie literally like an hour or two after having just sat through The Gunman with Sean Penn, which is his attempt to be like the male menopause with a gun guy, and so this came off a lot better.
Not surprised by that, I suppose.
Yeah.
These are resurrection stories.
And redemption stories.
And he gets, and we want him to just keep getting back up and getting back up and getting back up. And right. He does.
Yeah.
I just would like it to be wilder, if that's what this is going to be.
Okay. Yeah. Neeson wobbles, but he don't fall down.
No, he do not.
The Cobbler.
You saw The Cobbler. I did not see The Cobbler. Is it about peach cobbler?
No, the other kind.
I want a movie that is all about peach cobbler.
With, like, Paula Deen?
No. Not her. And not for the reasons you think.
Okay.
I think I've actually discussed these reasons before. Perhaps on this podcast.
Maybe what?
When I watch her cooking stuff on her show, she got those long manicured nails and rings that she just does not take off. And that... You can't cook without getting your hands in the food. Mm. You have nice, clean hands. You wash your hands. You get them right there in that food. It's going to happen. It doesn't matter what you're making. You're going to get your hands in the food.
And you don't think her nails are clean?
I think they're probably perfectly clean. But I'm phobic about manicures and jewelry in the food.
Mm.
I don't like it. I watch Martha Stewart. She has short, trimmed nails.
Yes.
She ain't married, so there's no wedding band.
No.
To get in the way. No big diamond ring, because that's not what Martha Stewart would do.
No.
Ever in her life.
No.
And so, you know, she gets her hands on the food, and you feel good about that.
Please touch my food, Martha.
Please touch my food. I just don't want to see Paula Deen put her hands in anybody's peach cobbler.
The cobbler is not about the dessert. It's about the shoemaker.
I can't listen to this unless it's about the dessert.
Adam Sandler is Peach Cobbler. Okay, it's directed by Tom McCarthy, who did two movies I really like, The Station Agent and Win-Win, and one that I did not, which was The Visitor. And this one definitely is in The Visitor territory. It is trying to be sort of magical, realist, whimsy, you know, little Jewish mysticism thrown in for good measure. We open in 1903, and there's all the Jewish craftsmen are being driven out of the neighborhood because the landlord is raising the rents, and they turn to the cobbler, and they give him a pair of the landlord's shoes, and we don't see exactly what happens, but we find out that this cobbler inherited this stitching machine from his father, who supposedly got it from an angel, who appeared to him as a vagrant, and he was the only person who fed him and gave him shelter and
just
and
stop right now.
Fixed his shoes. So this,
I'm done.
I barely started. We're before the credits.
I'm so unhappy already.
So apparently, this magical stitching machine. We find out when Adam Sandler, this is, you know, is now like a fourth generation cobbler, and he's sad because his father walked out in the family. And he's stuck in the father's shop. It turns out that when you use the stitching machine and you resole shoes that belong to somebody else, when the cobbler puts them on, he becomes that person. So you see all these people who are wearing, like, Adam Sandler's shirt or his scarf or whatever, and they're, like, staring at themselves in the mirror with a sort of, Adam Sandler dumbfounded face. So it's kind of a body-switching comedy, but it's all these people pretending like they're Adam Sandler.
So it's like, is this like the Todd Solondz film Palindromes?
No. No, it is not.
Then I don't want it. I don't want anything to do with it.
And so he gets involved with this, like, there's these bad, evil, Ellen Barkin is this real estate person who's hiring thugs to get the people out of the neighborhood, and so he's trying to use the magical shoes to fix things, and Melanie Diaz is a community activist that he is smitten with, and...
Does he cobble shoes for her?
He does not.
How many shoes does he cobble for there's people a lot in, this, of
cobbling.
In the movie?
There's a lot of cobbling, because he puts on Method Man's shoes, and Method Man turns out is very bad news, you know, yeah, like almost all the black...
Does he cobble the Christmas shoes?
He does not cobble the Christmas shoes. Almost all the black people in this movie are portrayed as thugs and gangsters.
Oh, good.
Yes, including Grizz of Grizzin.com from 30 Rock, who plays one of the flunkies of Method Man. He puts on Dan Stevens' shoes, you know, who was Matthew from Downton Abbey.
More Downton Abbey.
Yeah. And finds out that he's bi and ooh what?
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
That's now, you know what? Now I'm offended, and I think I may actually watch this film.
He puts on a drag queen's shoes, he puts on a dead guy's shoes, he did
A
lots of
drag queen
shoes.
or a trans person? Or does the movie not have the intelligence to distinguish
The
between those
movie
two
doesn't
things?
quite distinguish between the two. Here's the
Of
thing.
course it doesn't.
Well, here's the thing. When he puts the shoes on, the person is wearing whatever Adam Sandler was wearing.
Yes.
So all we know about the drag queen slash trans person is that it's a guy in a wig with makeup and fake boobs
Okay.
and big red stiletto heels,
So that's
but wearing Adam Sandler's like shirt and pants. So I don't know. It's hard to tell.
so the movie doesn't
care
care enough
particularly.
to make a distinction.
No.
Great.
When the Sandler character, when the character puts the shoes on, he's like, "I'm a woman," and puts his hands in his pants, and then goes, "Ah, no, I'm not." So,
I have to hate watch this.
this movie's really annoying. It starts out kind of
It sounds
charming.
despicable, actually.
The setup is kind of charming, and then it just gets dumber and dumber. And then there's this the ending. The final twist is so stupid, and so it's the kind of ending twist that makes you mad that you invested at all in the previous part of the story, because it's so dumb and such a cop out and such a like nice little bow on everything. It's really
It
irritating.
is the Ides of March today.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Maybe I should watch it so that I have something that I feel like I could stab.
Several times. Yeah, and so you know,
It sounds so gross.
it's really dumb.
Everything sounds awful about
It's
this.
so weird because you know Sandler is clearly was making this effort to try and like you know everybody tells me that Punch Drunk Love is the one good movie I
I
ever
don't think he
did.
was making any
Well,
efforts.
but here's the thing: he back to back he does Men, Women, and Children, and this.
In which he was not terrible.
Right, and
Even though it's a garbagey
he's not
movie.
terrible in this, but it's just but. So I admire the idea that he's at least going to make occasionally try and make some non-Happy Madison movies, but boy, they got to be better than Men, Women, and Children and The Cobbler because that's not helping at all. Ugh. Yeah, do not bother. It's on demand, so it's showing near you if you're in the U.S., but you needn't bother.
DVD picks.
My DVD pick this week is Hester Street. It's funny, I've been seeing a lot of Carol Kane lately. She was in a movie that I saw last year at the USA Film Festival called Clutter that our friend Paul Marcarelli wrote. She's on Gotham. She's on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix, which is hysterical. Have you seen any of that yet, by the way?
Nope.
I've seen the first four now. It's so funny. You'll really love it, I think. Anyway, this was the movie that got Carol Kane her Oscar nomination, and she plays an immigrant to the United States who lives in the Orthodox Jewish community in Brooklyn, and what happens to her relationship. And I don't want to give away too much, but it's really wonderful. It's directed by the great Joan Micklyn Silver, who I think is a really undersung figure of American independent cinema. In the 1970s, she was probably one of the very few female directors working at all, much less working sort of outside of the Hollywood system. And she's made a lot of really great movies. She made Hester Street and Between the Lines and Chilly Scenes of Winter and the Crossing Delancey and the HBO movie Finnegan Begin Again. So this was probably like her, I think her first big movie, maybe her first feature film. And it's quite lovely, and you know it's in Yiddish with English subtitles. It's I think a very accurate representation of sort of the immigrant Jewish community. Yeah, and Carol Kane is great in it. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. People should check it out.
I have a beautiful, beautiful movie
Yes.
to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
White Line Fever.
Woo!
One of the great moments in American film in the 70s was the burst of trucker films that came out, CB radio
Right.
enthusiast related films. This stars Jan Michael Vincent
Yes.
and Kay Lenz.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Carroll Joe Hummer. He's a working man who's had enough.
They've always had enough in these movies.
Let me tell you something. As a working man myself, I too have had enough.
You
know what I'm talking about.
You have deadline fever.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And I mean you, Alonso Duralde.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
He discovers that his long-haul trucking business is run by shady criminals.
Ah.
He's got to fight the corruption with his truck.
Right.
His rig.
Mm-hmm. And with K-Lens.
And the CB radio and K-Lens and a giant gun. And the truck flies. Well, on the poster it flies. This is an incredible poster. I remember this poster when I was a kid. And how exciting it made the movie look. Because the truck on the poster is just like...
soaring.
Crashing into something and soaring into the air. And I thought, when I saw that poster as a child, this is the film for me. And it was. It absolutely was.
So yes, White Line Fever.
If you're a working man who's had enough.
There you go.
This is the movie.
You know, a really a great CB radio movie that not enough people have seen? Have you ever seen Jonathan Demme's Handle with Care, a.k.a. Citizens Band?
Actually, you know, I have never.
I don't even know if it's on DVD. It's kind of tough to come by, but it's quite lovely. It's one of his sort of fun kind of ensemble comedies.
Do you know who directed White Line Fever?
I do not.
Jonathan Kaplan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. The Accused.
Yes.
Heart Like a Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Over the Edge.
I'd say he's the Over the Edge guy, right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's great.
Also, Night Call Nurses, but that was early in his career.
In the Corman years.
Yeah. And you know, he directs. He's still around. He directs lots of television.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, he's one of those like, I think Demme, too, actually, came out of the Corman school and went on to make really cool sort of, like, 70s, 80s, you know, not indie movies per se, but those, you know, kind of lower budget studio films and stuff.
So what's up? Letters?
Letters. What you got?
Hold, please, for letters. Linoleum. audiblepodcast.com/linoleum.
But letters go to linoleumpodcast at gmail.com.
This is just a note from James Vaughn. All caps, please create a ringtone of Dave saying, "Spill that tea, girl."
I have no idea how one would do that.
Promise you I will pay ridiculous amounts for it. Look, I'll do anything for people who will pay ridiculous amounts.
Yeah, that's true. You will eat anything for
$5. I'll eat anything for $5.
Not really.
This is from Daniel. Hey, guys. I almost turned on Ingu.
Don't do that.
When she said that No One Is Alone from Into the Woods is execrable. But then I remembered my rule that as soon as someone says they don't like musicals or show tunes, I stop caring what they think about them. So I'm back to liking her, only slightly less than I used to.
Okay, well, she'll have to live with that.
Also, I have two cassette tapes that are blank or can be recorded over, and I have to admit, I'm never going to use them again. I will be happy to send them to you. We might let you do that, actually. We could use a little stockpile in case some other bad things happen.
We have a whole extra one from James.
Doomsday Preppers.
Oh, I see.
Like a storage pile of cassettes.
The bunker of cassettes.
Yeah, cassette bunker. All right, Adam.
Go on.
Adam from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
He says, I'm here to give you my top 10 favorite films of all time and my top 10 for last year.
Yeah.
He's got two lists for us. Before I give you my list, I just wanted to tell you how much I love the podcast.
Oh, thanks.
And your show provided me with a much-needed respite when I was getting my master's in education. So what he means is...
he needed to turn off smart things.
He needed to turn off smart things and educational stuff and listen to us instead.
Some dummies to offer respite.
Here are his films. Number 10, A Most Violent Year. This is 2014.
Okay.
Top 10.
Awesome.
A Most Violent Year.
Yeah.
Birdman.
Mm-hmm.
Godzilla.
Mm.
I kind of loved that Godzilla.
I know you did.
Yeah. Grand Budapest.
Okay.
Lego Movie. All
right.
Love is Strange.
Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Okay.
Gone Girl.
Okay.
Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
Boyhood.
Great.
You're 100% knife.
95.
100.
I'm not giving him Godzilla. 95 is very good.
Fine.
95 is an A.
He included some notes with his titles. He said he thought Birdman was just a little too pleased with itself.
And it made it top 10 anyway.
I got, sort of agree with him, actually.
I mean, yes, but... You know.
His favorite Godzilla moment was when he breathed his atomic breath into the female Muto, grabbed her head, and then tossed it on the ground.
That was everyone's favorite moment. I feel fairly secure in saying. That and the final shot of Juliette Binoche.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's his list, his all times.
Okay.
The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, he wrote, holy bleep, Roger Deakins.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, holy bleep.
Yes.
The King of Kong.
Okay.
Which is great. Boyhood.
Yeah.
There's two lists for Boyhood.
Yeah.
Inherit the Wind.
Okay.
How can you not love a film where Spencer Tracy and Frederick March go toe-to-toe in the courtroom?
True. With Gene Kelly as H.L. Mencken, actually.
Run, Lola, Run.
Okay.
Yeah.
He Money. Says,
I saw the film when I was a freshman in college, and it changed my life. Before then, I would have never watched a foreign film. I go to movies to watch, not read.
No.
He said, I was dumb when I was young.
That's why we go to college, to learn things.
Zodiac.
Okay.
It's my favorite David Fincher film, and one of the best examples of how manic obsession can destroy your life.
Hmm.
Letters from Iwo Jima.
Ooh, good one.
He said, this is the war film that Clint Eastwood people should be watching.
Yes.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I could quote this almost word for word. 2, Fargo. To me, it's almost a perfect film. And again, Roger bleeping Deakins. The only person that loves Roger Deakins more than me is Christy Lemire.
She does. I don't love Fargo, but I know why people like it. So.
Number 1, all the Toy Stories.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I've never cried more than the ending of Toy Story 3.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's 100%. You got 95 and 100, so you're doing very well. With us, where it matters.
That's right.
Adam.
We give you a master's in movie watching. I don't know where that was going.
That's not a thing.
No, it's not. I'd have a PhD by now.
This is from Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, dudes. Longtime listener and super fan. Jeremy, you don't have to tell us who you are. We know who you are.
Which Jeremy?
It's Jeremy from Houston.
Oh, good heavens. Yeah. Yes.
Good heavens.
Good heavens.
I work from home as an editor and therefore have unlimited hours available for background podcasting and have decided to re-listen to all of the old retro Linoleum Knife episodes, starting with number 1.
Wow.
There is no good that comes of that.
I'm sure.
Although, are you keeping up with putting them on YouTube?
I've been.
How many have you put up on YouTube?
About 10 or 12.
Get on it.
Yeah. I will. I know. I've been remiss. I need to do that.
Stop being remiss.
Well, I mean, it's not like you can't hear them online. They're still on our Libsyn site. But I will put more of them on YouTube. Yes.
This adventure has led me to the September 4th, 2011 episode, which is where I have discovered one of my new favorite Linoleum Knife moments. In this episode, while discussing your separate college experiences, Alonzo refers to all 18 to 23-year-olds as spectacularly worthless.
No offense. Soon you'll be 24 and your life will be different.
Which I believe to be the most accurate statement in the history of statements. Despite personally being a member of the age group described. This spectacular phrase is now my new favorite and one that I believe should be utilized on a more regular basis, like on t-shirts. And he provides a mocked-up t-shirt of a lion, black t-shirt, with a lion in profile standing atop the phrase, spectacularly worthless. Thanks for the awesome new phrase and the hundreds upon hundreds of hours of podcast awesomeness. Keep being rad. I got no choice. But to keep being rad.
This is, what is this, episode 214?
I don't know.
Like, I'm going to bother to keep count again.
But. I don't know. We're close. Yeah, we're close to, we're in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Of 214. I said last week we were at 213, and I was just sort of guessing. So.
No, I actually did a count recently, so I think that's where we are.
Oh, wait. I got a different email from Adam. And, I don't see the difference. Well, he says they're different.
Did you read the first one or the second one? Have you ruined everything?
I don't know. He'll correct us if we've screwed something up.
I suppose so. Way to go, Dave.
That's it. We're done. We've got other letters, but don't wait.
Yes, we'll get to them next time. Once again, thank you to Audible for their sponsorship, audiblepodcast.com/linoleum. And of course, you can check out.
You said that in a very announcery kind of way. Audiblepodcast.com/linoleum.
Is that a bad thing?
No, I guess not.
Okay, then shut up.
It's just funny. It's funny to hear that coming out of your mouth.
Get off my larynx. Also reminding you to check out our new Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode where we discuss the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, yeah, that. We did that, didn't
yeah.
we? Give us your money, damn it.
It's $1.99. You can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
What are you going to do with $1.99?
Buy that episode.
Buy a cup of soup.
You can also get our...
It's not as good as this our extra podcast episode of ours.
You can get our extra episodes devoted to Clue, Josie and the Pussycats, Two for the Road, The Apple. I have asked on Twitter, just out of curiosity, as I said on Twitter, this is not a
you
democracy.
You really opened up a can doing
no,
this.
No, I said up front, this is not a democracy, and you know we are not committing to anything, but I was just curious to see what listeners might want to hear. So if you want to go to Linoleum, LinoleumCast at Twitter, @LinoleumCast, and give us movies that you would like us to do commentaries for, we will consider your suggestions.
Until somebody suggests we do Visconti's The Leopard, I'm not want to hear it.
I'm not doing The Leopard.
The movie's amazing.
I'm not doing that. It's like 3 hours long.
Oh, you're right. It is really
it's
long.
It's crazy long. Yeah, and nothing that. Happens in it. Oh, look. And it's another room. This one has a chandelier in it.
It's incredible. That film is incredible.
Yeah, I still don't want to do a commentary. I love last year at Marty and Bob, but I don't want to do a commentary.
Absolutely
that.
Nothing alike.
I'm just saying, it's a lot of people sitting in rooms. So that's a thing, and we hope you will purchase it. And in the meantime, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends everywhere. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and the previously mentioned The Canon and Malton on Movies over at Wolf Pop. Oh, and the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, of course, over at Wolf Pop. The Schmoes Know, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and that would be a lovely place to leave us a review, because the more positive reviews we get, the more people find the show, and it really does help our status over at iTunes, and people will stumble upon the show. So if you've already left us a review, thank you, and if you haven't, please do. That would be great. You can also stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us a little thumbs up there. And there's an app to listen to the show on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Please go like it if you haven't already, because for the audibles of the world, the number of likes our podcast, our Facebook page has means a thing.
It does.
Also on Facebook, you can join the Linoleum
Knife. I need all the likes.
You can join the Linoleum Knife group where our listeners talk to each other about film, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And yes, I will be updating our YouTube channel with more of our earliest episodes very soon, I promise. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you PayPal us for goodies, and it's also where you can drop us a line asking questions, giving us your top 10 list, whatever you feel like sharing with us. We will be back next week, and we hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.